Grant, sent all the way to Richmond for him. That's how come he settled here in New York. Yes, sir, my son is sure a great man. But alas for poor Joel, his idea of greatness and his mammy's were totally at variance. The kind of greatness he had envisaged had been that which gets one before the public eye, which makes one a leader of causes, a man among men. He loved such phrases. At night, the little boy in the tiny half-story room in that tiny house in Virginia picked out the stories of Napoleon, Lincoln, and Garrison. All white men, it is true, but Lincoln had been poor and Napoleon unknown, and yet they had risen to the highest possible state. At least he could rise to comparative fame. And when he was older and came to know of Frederick Douglass and Toussaint L'Ouverture, he knew if he could but burst his bonds, he too could write his name in glory. This was no selfish wish. If he wanted to be great, he also wanted to do honestly and faithfully the things that bring greatness. He was, to that end, dependable and thorough in all that he did. He had so much against him. His color, his poverty, meant nothing to his ardent heart. Those were nature's limitations, placed deliberately about one he could see dimly to try one's strength on. But that he should have a father broken and sickened by slavery, who lingered on and on, that after that father's death, the little house should burn down? He was 15 when that happened, and he and his mother both went to work in the service of Harvey Carter, a wealthy Virginian whose wife entertained on a large scale. It was here that Joel learned from an expert chef how to cook. His wages were small even for those days, but still he contrived to save, for he had set his heart on attending a theological seminary. Someday he would be a minister, a man with a great name and a healing tongue. These were the dreams he dreamed as he basted Mrs. Carter's chickens or methodically mixed salad dressing. His mother knew his ideas and loved them with such a fine, albeit somewhat uncomprehending passion and belief that in grateful return he made her the one other consideration of his life, weaving unconsciously about himself a web of such loyalty and regard for her that he could not have broken through it if he would. Her very sympathy defeated his purpose, so that when she, too, fell ill on a day with what seemed for years an incurable affliction, Joel shut his teeth and put his frustrated plans behind him. He drew his small savings from the bank and rented a tiny 2.5-room shack in the front room of which he opened a restaurant, really a little lunch stand. He was patronized at first only, and that sparingly, by his own people. But gradually, the fame of his wonderful sandwiches, his inimitable pastries, his pancakes, brought him first more black customers, then white ones, then outside orders. In 5 years' time, Joel's catering became known statewide. He conquered poverty and came to know the meaning of comfort. The Grant incident created a reputation for him in New York, and he was shrewd enough to take advantage of it and move there. 10 years too late, old Mrs. Marshall was pronounced cured by the doctors. She never understood what her affliction had cost her son, his material success, his position in the church, in the community at large, and in the colored business world. All these things meant power. To her, her son was already great. Joel did not undertake to explain to her that his lack of education would be a bar forever between him and the kind of greatness for which his heart had yearned. It was after he moved to New York and after the death of his mother that Joel married. His wife had been a schoolteacher, and her precision of language and exactitude in small matters made Joel think again of the education and subsequent greatness which were to have been his. His wife was kind and sweet, but fundamentally unambitious, and for a time the pleasure of having a home and in contrasting these days of ease with the hardships of youth made Joel somewhat resigned to his fate. "Besides, it's too late now," he used to tell himself. "What could I be?" So he contented himself with putting by his money and attending church, where he was a steward and really the unacknowledged head. His first child brought back the old king longing. It was a boy